council ready to proceed?
Ready, Your Honor.
All right, then we will proceed on to our next case. I'll have the clerk call the case first.
The court will now call Damian Merritt versus the State of Texas. The man pleads the court, Ms. Lisa Mullins to argue for the appellate, and Mr. David Carroll to argue for the state.
All right, Ms. Mullins, you may proceed.
Thank you. May it please the court. First, let me say, reintroduce myself, Lisa Mullen. I'm not sure if I've had the opportunity to argue before this panel before. As I recall, I haven't. So I want to personally thank you. I appreciate the opportunity to speak before the court. I know y'all's time is very limited, and you have, from the looks of that last case, a whole lot of work. And I just can't believe how y'all can do both civil and criminal. I'm only criminal, and I only understand what we're talking about here today. So thank you for allowing me to have the opportunity to talk to you, and Happy New Year. Here we go into a new year, 2018. This case sort of illuminates some of the issues that are going to arise and be coming in the future, as in the social media explosion that we're seeing and the types of evidence that I think is this court and the higher court will have to address as far as admissibility, relevance, impeachment, when people choose to live out loud on the internet publicly, as we saw in this case. Also, the evolution of drug intake is going to be interesting for us to deal with in the court system, particularly criminally, as in the marijuana issue in this particular case and its identification, which to me are the two issues in my limited time I want to address. Unless the court has questions about the other issues, I'll just rely on the brief regarding those. So turning to the first issue, in this particular case, the defendant was convicted, actually, of sexual assault of a 16-year-old, one count the jury found not guilty on, and he was convicted of delivery of marijuana to three minors. An additional count he was found not guilty on concerning a different allegation. So basically, as to the first count of the sexual assault and that complainant, the one he was found guilty on, the major issue there that we raise is a denial of the proper impeachment. The opportunity to impeach her with, there was a bunch of them, but I focused on 112 social media photographs, posts, statements made that the defense was not allowed to impeach her with. What's important to consider in this case is that the complainant testimony was the sole evidence of the actual sexual assault. She was 16, so it wasn't aggravated. It was not alleged to be non-consensual, so to speak, as far as no weapon or anything of that nature. And so her credibility as far as whether or not that actual conduct occurred was crucial and was the entirety of the case for which the defendant got 15 years in the penitentiary. So her credibility is highly and exceedingly important in the case and the conviction and the sufficiency of the evidence to get there. So the impeachment of her credibility obviously is tenfold important when we're talking about her credibility as a witness being basically the sole evidence for conviction.
Let me ask you this.
Yes.
When you offered these items into evidence as well as other things that you now complain about, did you, your argument, as I read the record, was that it went to credibility or perhaps to motive. But now, on appeal, you are arguing differently, constitutional issues.
Okay.
Did you ever argue those same constitutional issues before the trial court?
Okay, first thing is, my good friend Joetta King was actually the trial attorney. I was not the trial counsel. But that's okay.
Corrected. Yes.
I'll take her plea. I consider that an honor that you would think that was me, but it wasn't. But in the record, the constitutionality, she did not stand up and say that denies my right to confrontation. I will agree with you on that.
You have to get up and say that to preserve the error on appeal.
Under this court's opinion in Gallaudet, no, you don't. And there's a huge distinction between evidence that is not allowed to be admitted and preservation of error versus error that is denied or admitted over the objection of defense.
Okay,
yes, Judge.
But Gallaudet is kind of the elephant in the room, isn't
yes.
it? I mean, it just really is. And the state argues that this court is an outlier court on that Gallaudet issue And you probably are aware that I dissented in Gallaudet.
Yes.
If, just hypothetically, don't take anything from this.
Okay.
If, hypothetically, Gallaudet was, we overruled our opinion in Gallaudet and went the other way, which Reyna and the Court of Criminal Appeals has, the Reyna case is Court of Criminal Appeals and the other courts of appeals across the state have gone, would you have the same issue?
Would I have the same issue as far as being able to appeal it? Is that the question?
On the constitutionality.
Yes, I think so, because when you're denied the right to cross-examine a witness, then that's what you're denied. That's the right to confrontation. I don't think it's required that
there's cases that say that objection does not raise the constitutional confrontation when you just object based upon lack of cross-examination.
And there are also cases that say the opposite. I don't think there's a million of cases that talk about from the Court of Criminal Appeals that magic words are not required when it's clear from the import of the proffer to the judge, because that's what we're talking about, real world trial, right?
How do we know it was clear to the judge that she was raising Crawford and confrontation?
Because Judge Westfall was very clear in understanding it. In fact, Joetta said numerous times, am I clear in this proffer? Do I need to say anything else? I want you to look through all of these exhibits and make sure, because I want to offer all of them, but in the interest of time, the judge didn't want them to go through each and every one. But it's clear on the record the judge reviewed each one, and she was saying, I think Joetta said numerous times, so she's allowed to lie, she's allowed to get up here and lie and not be cross-examined on these issues. I think the judge was very clear that she was overruling any objection to cross-examination, right to present her defense, because Joetta or Ms. Keene argued numerous times, the defensive theory in the case was, or one of them, there was really two, but the major one was that the allegation was false and made up by the complainant as a way to get attention off of herself and her bad choices that she was making at the time. And so everything she said was diverted away from her bad behavior, and actually the complainant did testify. My parents were very mad at me. I was getting in trouble. They were taking my phone away because of the things I was doing, and then they realized it was all because of him, and I wasn't in trouble anymore. That's really the defensive theory in the case. And to deny the defense an opportunity to impeach her with evidence to prove that, as in the 112 social media posts that directly impeached, went to their defense to prove their defense, directly impeached her credibility, directly impeached statements she made on the stand. I think...
Did Ms. Keene specify, I mean, to offer a massive amount of social media posts...
Yes.
...without specifying which one goes to impeach on a proper area of impeachment of a child witness in a sexual assault case. Was that ever done?
I believe it was. And here's...
Each and every one, ma'am?
Not each and every one, no. It wasn't done. But I think the judge gave her leeway to do that. And here's why. Judge Westfall didn't want to sit there and let Joetta ask every single question that she was going to say couldn't be admitted. And that's clear on the record. And you can see where she...
Object to being denied that opportunity to do that? To preserve that?
No, because the judge said it was preserved. If you'll read on the record, the judge says she says at some point, there's not much reading. I'll look through each one. There's not much reading that needs to be done, because most of them were honestly photographs and things of that nature, right? And so the judge had agreed, and if you read the entirety, they kind of go into this, and I cite it all in my brief. The various places, there's jabs taken at the admissibility of these items of evidence. When it becomes clear to Ms. Keene that the judge is not going to allow any of this in, then they send the jury out, and you know, they have to clear the courtroom, and so it's a huge process. And so the reality of trial work is we're trying to do it as efficiently.
I understand that, and I've been a prosecutor, I've been a trial lawyer.
I know.
At the same time.
Okay.
There are obligations that you have to follow, and you have to insist upon before the trial court in order to preserve objections, regardless of how much of an irritation it may be to the judge.
Yes. Yeah, but I do think that there's an interest in...
There's a lot of case law out there that says that it's not the trial judge's job or our job to peruse. You have to make a specific objection on every piece of evidence. You just can't do a dump on the judge and preserve every possible objection and complaint when you come up to this level. Don't you agree?
I agree to that with that, obviously, to a point, because I think you can dump on the judge when she wants you to. And I think Judge Westfall was very clear, give me all the documents you want to do. These questions have been asked. I'm not letting this come in. And so let me see what you're offering. Why are you offering it? They have a lot of discussion about that on the record with the courtroom cleared. It's clear Judge Westfall has gone through every item of evidence, and she basically gives Ms. Keene leeway not to have to do that, and says, and like I said, Joetta says a couple of times, have I made it clear, do I need to go through each one and authenticate, because she's concerned about that, and the judge says, no, you know, see if they'll stipulate, they stipulated the authentication, and I think Ms. Keene made it very clear that it went to that the judge's denial of her being able to confront the complainant regarding all of those items or any one of them in specific, and she does say that as well. If the judge won't let them all in, I want to be able to do whatever one you feel it would be admissible and to go to proper cross-examination. And that's spelled out in the record. She says those words. The right to present a defense. She says that numerous times. The denial of the admission of this cross-examination hand ties us in our ability to be able to present a defense in this
motive.
Of motive, yes, of the motive.
Okay.
Right.
So what in all of those 100, 200 social media posts, you said many of which were photographs
yes.
of smoking dope and doing things that she shouldn't be doing, what didn't really come in? Because a lot of that actually came in, that she had another sexual partner came in, the fact that she was smoking dope came in. What didn't come in?
Well, the fact that she was smoking dope with a child that was clearly around the age of 8 or 9 and bragging about blowing the weed into the child's mouth.
And how does that go to her motive if her parents didn't know about that?
It directly rebutted the fact that she had testified in court that she never did anything bad, never did drugs until he was around, or when he was around, was her actual quote. I only did drugs with him. I only lied because of him. And the massive amount, and let me say this, because I'm a mom and I have teenage kids, I don't take any joy in talking about this. Let's just put it that way. This is not something that anybody wants to have to deal with. But the truth is, a person gets convicted and credibility is important. And somebody ought not be allowed to stand up and say, I would never have done anything wrong but for him. I did not do drugs but for him. And then we've got virtually, I think I counted 107 posts in social media wherein they are doing drugs without him. And we're not talking marijuana. We're talking cocaine, Ativan, every type of drug you can imagine. The list goes on and on. And I think I'm very specific in my brief where I talk about how it rebuts exact quotes that she said. Things she testified in court, I point out for the court, and I don't have time now, but...
Were these social media posts after she met him?
Some were after, some were right before she testified, which I think that goes to credibility and impeachment at the time she testifies. I mean, we're using drugs and huge amounts of drugs right prior to testimony. I think that goes to credibility, and that was argued in the trial court as well. What was your first question, Judge? I think I got off track. Moniker, part of her name, which I won't mention, Stays Lit, was there previous to the incident altogether. Another one was Name Ecstasy, which was her moniker that she had prior to the incident. So there are in a membership in Established Men, or a page in establishedmen.com, Seeking a Sugar Daddy, where she testified directly she didn't know how to get out of a relationship with an older man. I think that is a direct impeachment of that testimony. I think we need to protect victims. There's no question. But I also think that cannot withstand scrutiny when we have direct evidence to prove that it's untruthful. And it's just not fair. I don't think our system should condone it, my perspective. Let me talk about the weed real quick, if you don't mind, the marijuana case, because I think it's very, very interesting, and I'm going to start talking real fast. In 2002, basically, the Court of Criminal Appeals and this court and all the appellate courts decided, kind of morphed into a finding that we don't have to have chemical analysis on marijuana cases anymore. It can be identified by somebody who has personal knowledge of basically police officers. That's changed with K2, that's because it looks like weed. And I'll come back to that when I get back up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Curl.
May it please the court. My name is David Curl, and I'm representing the state. I intend to talk about issues 1, 3, and 4 today and rely on our brief for issue 2. Issues 1, 3, and 4 all complain about the exclusion of defense evidence. But appellant's complaint, as we talked about on appeal, is not the complaint appellant presented to the trial court. And under RENA, that means that appellant's complaint should be held forfeited.
Do we have to reverse Galladay to get where you want to go?
I don't believe you do. I believe that your duty to the Court of Criminal Appeals is greater than your duty to this court. You could just say we're going to follow RENA, because RENA cannot be reconciled with Galladay.
That's not the question I'm asking. Under the context of Galladay, if Galladay is the law of this court, which it is, does the state still win on the preservation argument?
No, I don't see how we can. But the first holding in Galladay is that you don't have to preserve it at all when you're talking about the admission of defense evidence.
I'm not sure if you're reading the case correctly, counsel. In fact, I take a lot of issue with the briefing that you submitted in this case. Whether you disagree with Galladay or not, I think it's outrageous for the state to make comments like this in a brief. The Galladay majority scoured the record for defense counsel, comments that the majority then construed and lied extraordinarily favorable to defense complaints on appeal. Well, you're basically accusing us of misconduct.
I don't believe I am.
I think you are.
I'm sorry if you're offended, but I think that's an accurate characterization of what happened. But in Galladay, the court looked at a comment made in an opening statement about
scoured the record. How do you know what happened at this court or what we did? The case is what it is.
Well,
and you can disagree with it, but you should not make those type of statements about the court. And you have a duty under the Texas Lawyers Creed to show this court decorum and respect. And pardon me, but I don't think you were doing it when you made that statement in your brief.
Well, I apologize if that's the way you read it. I think it's unusual.
If you would have done that in federal court, you would have been skinned.
Well, sorry, I'm trying to say my point was it's unusual for a court to find evidentiary error preserved in a comment made in opening statement. I think that's, and a vague comment made in opening statement. That's the only point I was trying to make. I wasn't trying to
make you. Then make the point. Don't make digs at the court in your briefing.
All right. I'll try to watch that, Your Honor.
Let me ask you this, counsel. If we do what you think we should do, which is essentially overrule Galladay, follow RENA, and we find that the constitutional argument that there's not been an argument that the exclusion of evidence has constitutional implications with regard to the defendant, we're now to a harm analysis, are we not, at that point in time? As opposed to harm is presumed if the exclusion of evidence implicates constitutional rights of confrontation and cross-examination.
I guess I didn't understand. You're skipping. You're saying that error is preserved and you jump right to harm. Is that what you're asking?
Well, no. The significance of whether or not the constitutional violation that is alleged in the briefing has been preserved or not is whether or not we presume harm based upon a constitutional violation, is it not?
No.
And if we don't have the constitutional harm, then it's a harm analysis.
No, that's not. Cases that follow RENA and say that the appellate complaint is not preserved, they're done. They don't get on to an issue of the merits or the harm. He's making a constitutional complaint on appeal, and he didn't preserve.
So you can't make both a constitutional complaint and an evidentiary complaint in the same situation. In other words, that just simply as a matter of evidence, that the impeachment should have been allowed, and the failure to allow the impeachment resulted in a judgment that was that it was harmful error because it resulted likely resulted in improper judgment.
Well, you
that's not a constitutional evaluation. That's a purely evidentiary evaluation.
You could make two arguments on appeal, but the appellant is making one argument. He's making a constitutional complaint. And once we decide the constitutional complaint isn't preserved, I think the issue's waived.
Okay.
So you
don't think their briefing makes both arguments?
I don't believe they're making both arguments.
Okay, so they're not capping the evidentiary argument with a constitutional argument.
I believe that their point of error is that there was a constitutional violation.
Okay. Well, let's assume that they'd made both. Why was it harmless error to exclude the testimony that is the impeachment that they're arguing?
Under an evidentiary standard?
Under an evidentiary standard.
Okay. I was going to make several arguments about the merits of the trial court's ruling. Can I just say one more final thing about
sure.
Judge Pitchman's questions about the preservation issue? There is, I agree that magic words aren't required, but the Court of Criminal Appeals in Grain has said that credibility does not preserve a constitutional complaint, because if you make a vague complaint, you're going to suffer the consequences on the preservation issue. So turning to the first issue about these 216 social media postings.
Essentially, the way I read it is, it's a motive argument that's being made. Two theories with regard to motive. One is deflection. The other is retaliation. Deflection with regard to the social media would be she doesn't want her mom and dad to know that she's sexually active and she does drugs. Okay. The other is retaliation with regard to the defendant, the appellant in this instance, got her boyfriend fired or something to that effect. Okay. All of that was excluded.
That's issue four, the boyfriend business.
Okay, but I'm kind of putting them together. All of that was excluded from an evidentiary standpoint. Why was its exclusion harmless? What evidence was already in the record? Okay. For example, with regard to, I guess, point three, or maybe it's included in your point three, there's already testimony that she had, as Justice Gabriel noted, there's already testimony that she had another sexual intimacy with a 17-year-old, okay? In other words, there's already testimony of another source for this sexually transmitted disease that came into evidence, okay? So that would be some argument that the exclusion of the actual number of other sexual partners would be harmless error under the circumstance from an evidentiary standpoint as opposed to a constitutional standpoint. So that's what I'm looking for in terms of the social media exclusion.
Okay, what I really wanted to argue today was that there was an error in the social media exclusion, and I guess that dovetails into harm. These social media things were about stuff that happened about 16 months after the offense. So a theory that they have something to do with motive or credibility, I think, has very little persuasive value. We argued in our brief on page 40 that the judge could exclude all of these social media postings as collateral impeachment. Appellant, he got the witness to say that that on cross-examination that she blamed appellant for her problems, and he then thinks that he can introduce anything that reflects badly on the victim in order to rebut it, and that's just not allowed. That's collateral impeachment. They also could be excluded because they're full of hearsay. And appellant can't dispute that because he didn't argue to the trial court under 105B that some statements in there were not being offered for the truth. And he would have had to go through each one of those social media postings and point out which statements he wasn't offering for its truth. And he didn't do anything like that. And just touching on the on-mouse offer business, appellant seems to argue that on-mouse offers are more efficient, and I'd certainly agree with that, but they're not the way you preserve error. And so appellant's got to show that absolutely everything in these 216 postings was admissible. Another problem with the hearsay in the postings was that he was clearly offering the victim's statements for their truth. For example, Defense Exhibits 12 and 37 indicate that the victim likes alcohol. Well, the appellant's trying to prove that she liked alcohol. That's offered for its truth. So they could all be excluded on the basis of hearsay. They also contained Rule 412 evidence. That's discussed on page 38 of our brief. We believe that they were really, it was not really an attempt to attack the victim's credibility. It was an attempt to make the victim look bad, to bias the jury against her. And so we believe it could all be kept out under 403, and that's discussed in page 43 of our brief. So far from being harmful, it wasn't even relevant, wasn't even admissible. So turning to the non-virginity stuff, which is the second part of issue one, again, we point out in our brief at page 47 that this is could be excluded as prohibited collateral impeachment. He got the witness to say on cross-examination that he gave an answer about why she didn't want to do a rape exam, and then he argues that he can come after the victim with some kind of impeaching evidence. Well, you can't do that under the collateral impeachment prohibition.
Isn't it correct in any event that the nurse did not testify as having knowledge of her sexual partners other than one, and that was already in evidence?
That's issue three, yes. In issue three, he wanted to present sexual preference evidence and sexual partners evidence. The nurse said she didn't have knowledge of her sexual partners, and she testified that the sexual preference evidence would not rebut the STD and the rape exam. So there's nothing really to complain about in issue three for him. Another point about the non-virginity evidence is that there was later testimony presented at trial that the victim wasn't a virgin, so that is strong evidence that it wasn't harmful exclusion and was repetitive. And on the final point on the non-virginity stuff we talk about on page 48 is that the theory of omission, the judge can exclude it if he finds the theory of omission isn't logical. And his theory was apparently that the victim made claims against him because she wanted to hide from her parents that she wasn't a virgin. Well, if that was her motive, if she was acting in bad faith, she could have blamed anything found in the rape exam on appellant. She could have not made a sexual outcry. So the trial court was entitled to find it wasn't a logical inference. The final part of issue one is the psychiatric diagnosis. Appellant's parent theory is that if you are a witness and you have...
Let me make sure I understand your argument. Is that essentially you're saying the trial court wouldn't have to make, could ignore that inference, or that the inference wasn't justified, because in fact if she really wanted to deflect matters, the worse that she accused the defendant of, the better the deflection.
Right.
So if deflection is the theory with regard to motive, then just a little bit of deflection as opposed to a lot of deflection, the court could make the inference that the inference isn't justified.
Well, and on top of that, if your main motive is to not have your parents find out that you're not a virgin, you don't make a sexual outcry. That's another thing that she would have logically done. On the diagnosis theory, appellant seems to argue that if you have a psychiatric diagnosis, you're just vulnerable to impeachment, just with nothing more than the diagnosis. And as we discussed on page 50 of our brief, the Court of Appeals in Virts said that you have to establish a nexus between the diagnosis and the ability of the person to be a witness. The final one issue I want to talk about is issue four. This is appellant's desire to put his daughter on the stand and have her testify that, one, she saw the victim dating an older man and told her father about it, and two, he got the older man fired. The first thing to point out about this is that the victim essentially testified to this already at volume 4, page 183. She said that he got this guy fired. So it's entirely cumulative, and appellant's got nothing to complain about. The fact that the victim was dating an older man should be barred under 403. It has nothing to do with issues of guilt or innocence. And one thing that I didn't get to in the brief, but the judge actually excluded this on the theory of hearsay, and these are out-of-court statements. Certainly the backdoor hearsay that appellant got the man fired is a backdoor hearsay. So unless there are any questions, we'll simply pray for an affirmance. Thank you.
Just Just briefly in rebuttal, I guess the first thing I want, he had mentioned that this was offered to make her look bad. And I don't believe so. And I think from the import of the arguments made by Ms. Keene, it's clear nobody was taking delight in it. Nobody was trying to make somebody look bad. What this was trying to offer to show was the truth. The truth that was not shown to the jury by the state as they proffered her as a very demure, innocent individual who was embarrassed and didn't want this to come out because she didn't want people to know about her personal life.
You said this was being offered to impeach her statement that it was basically 100% his fault, but it was Ms. Keene that asked that question and drew that answer. Can you set up your own impeachment that way? Can you bootstrap it?
I don't think you can open your own door. That's correct. But that question by Ms. Keene was after the state had already introduced testimony along those exact same lines. She was doing follow-up, if you look in the record, and I'm praying I cited those correctly. But the state had asked her, you know, things along those lines, and Joetta was just following up on cross-examination, laying the foundation then to offer hers. But I think standing alone, you can't open your own door, obviously. I would completely agree with that. But I do think it's very scary that the truth sometimes, well, I think in this particular case, was not allowed to come out, and the jury was allowed to see one side and a very biased one side that was not the truth. She didn't want to tell anybody her testimony was because she didn't want anybody to know, but yet on her Stay Lit or her Ecstasy monikered site, she liked the Facebook page post showing that he had gotten arrested for the sexual assault. I think that directly impeaches her credibility, veracity, truth. The fact that right before trial she posts, we are the very essence of manipulative and ungrateful bees. I think that is a different individual, and that impeached the false impression that was left for the jury of the type of person who was testifying. And I'm not saying she's a horrible person. I'm saying, you know, everybody makes mistakes. That's not what I'm saying. But you can't leave that impression with the jury and not expect to be confronted with things you actually are posting out in media as far as who you are, who you continue to be, and the choices you make, and being exceedingly proud of those choices, not ashamed at all, living way out loud and very proud of using drugs and all the activity that was going on. And I think for those reasons, the court absolutely failed in not letting it, at least some of that proper impeachment evidence of the complainant through the social media, not to badmouth her, but to bring forward the truth. Now, I really want to talk about this marijuana real quick. It may not be interesting to the court, but I hope it kind of is, because the law developed in such a way to where no chemical analysis is required for marijuana. A cop can say that's marijuana, and that's all the state has to do to prove that it's actually marijuana. That's 2002. Now, let's flash forward now to our day and time, where we've got K2 that looks just like marijuana.
Is there anything in the record that supports what you just said, that K2 looks a lot like marijuana?
No, but it's a reality as far as what we know.
But don't we have to just look at the record?
I think if there was evidence that it was K2, yeah, you'd have to look at that. But I'm just arguing the reason why the court suddenly said you don't have to have chemical analysis is because everybody knows that what marijuana has a distinctive smell. But marijuana no longer has a distinctive smell that's only marijuana.
But was not there evidence that the Tootsie Rolls that contained it had been purchased at a Colorado store that specifically sold marijuana, which is marijuana's only legal to be sold in Colorado? But why would that not be some evidence of marijuana being provided?
I would say that is some evidence of marijuana being provided. What my argument is given this day and age and edibles and vapes and K2 and spice, we need to go back to a standard where a chemical analysis is required to actually prove. I mean, Tootsie Roll could be Tootsie Roll, or obviously it could be something quite different, which is an amazing concept to me, but that's where we're at. A jelly bean can be, you know, one thing very illegal and one thing that's not illegal at all.
Aren't you asking us to to conduct, and forgive my civil background here, a Robinson analysis on appeal when it should have been raised as an objection to the evidence not being reliable in the trial court.
Okay, you have to excuse my ignorance of civil law.
The scientific reliability of the testimony. You're essentially arguing that the girls themselves couldn't identify it because they didn't have expertise, although apparently they had sufficient expertise with prior use to know if it smelled like a duck and walked like a duck, it was a duck. So
yes,
but you're asking us on appeal effectively to recognize some type of scientific unreliability objection that wasn't made in the trial court.
In a nutshell, I'm asking you to reassess what was held in 2002 because of the changing times, that because we could always rely on that's what weed is, that no longer is the case. And so I think we should go back to requiring, I'm asking the court to require a standard of chemical analysis in marijuana proof, because there's so many things that can look, smell like a duck, and they're not a duck, and they're not marijuana. Thank you for your court's patience.
Okay, thank you very much for your briefs and your argument here today. Your case is submitted, and you are excused, and we will adjourn.
All rise. The Honorable Court of Appeals for the Second District.